Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Support for episodes of Luke's English Podcast comes from my listeners in the form of donations and also my sponsors. And for this episode, that is iTalki. iTalki are a service that you can use if you're looking for a one-to-one teacher in English. So they provide you with loads and loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of different one-to-one teachers. They've got people who specialize in exams or job interview stuff or just general English. And the cool thing is that, you know, you can set your schedule yourself. You can have lessons wherever, whenever you want. It's all done online. So you can just sit in your underpants, respectfully, obviously. You could sit with your underpants not visible in the on camera, but technically you could sit there without trousers on. Hopefully you'd be wearing a shirt or something on top, but if you wanted to, you could be comfortable and just choose to stay undressed from the waist down in an appropriate way, of course. And you can, you know, choose what kind of lessons you want. Also, they have community tutors who are less expensive than the teachers. They're not qualified teachers, but they are native English speakers. Those community tutors, being a cheaper option, are there. They're willing, glad, helpful, very up for sharing their language with you as much as they can. Can be a great way to improve your English if you're not necessarily looking for structured lessons. So they're, you know, a variety of different options. And when you buy some talking time with iTalki, because you listen to this podcast, they will send you a voucher worth a free lesson. Check that offer out at teacherluke.co.uk/talk or click an iTalki logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, ladies and gentlemen of podcast land. Welcome to another new episode of this podcast for learners of English. Now then, in this one, you can listen to a conversation I had with my friend Raphael Miller. Raph and I used to work together as teachers at the London School of English, along with Andy Johnson, Ben Butler and Carrick Cameron, all of whom have featured in episodes of this podcast before. Since those days, Raph has done lots of work at summer schools in the UK and has recently set up his own summer school project, which is called Your English Summer. This is a school for teenagers from around the world who'd like to come to the UK to develop their English skills while having a really cool experience living away from home for a couple of weeks. I thought I'd ask Raph about his project, about the benefits of sending your teenagers to the UK for a summer school English experience, and also about Raph's own experiences of learning languages as a teenager and into adulthood, because he speaks a couple of languages himself. I hadn't spoken to Raph for a while, actually, before doing this. Not since the last time he was on this podcast, perhaps, and he's been on the podcast before. Long-term listeners might remember him from episode 160, which was called The A to Z of Christmas. So it was really fun to catch up with him, find out about his projects, and also just ramble on about all kinds of other things, like his experiences at Oxford University, where he studied, his childhood in Liverpool, and a famous actor that he knows from university who has had a big role in a Star Wars film. Yes, Raph knows someone from a Star Wars film. To find out all about that, just keep listening. Now, this might be a difficult conversation for you to follow, depending on your level. Reasons why it might be hard are, first of all, the conversation was done over Skype, so the sound quality isn't 100% perfect, but it's good to get used to listening in less than perfect conditions, like, for example, when you have to do teleconferences in English at work. So it is good practice to listen to Skype conversations. Raphael has a slight Liverpool accent, but actually I think this isn't really an issue because his accent isn't really that strong. And also, it might be difficult to follow all of this because the whole conversation is done at natural speed, and there are quite a lot of idioms, jokey bits, specific phrases, and fluent speech that might be hard to understand. But the point here is that this is an authentic chat, which ultimately is good practice for you. If you are a parent of teenage kids and you're thinking about sending them to summer school in the UK to learn English, then you should check out Raphael's school, which is called Your English Summer. And there are more details at yourenglishsummer.co.uk. Now then, let's get stuck into the conversation. And just before I hit the record button, Raph and I had been struggling to get connected on Skype. It wasn't working properly on his computer. But to solve the problem, he just turned it off and then turned it back on again, which fixed it, of course, because that's usually how you fix technical problems, isn't it? What do you do when something doesn't work, when you've got a technical issue? How do you fix it? Well, have you tried turning it on and turning it off again? That usually works. That's as simple as it gets, really. Just turn it off and turn it on again. There are other generic solutions to typical technical problems, of course. Can you think of any? We talk about that right at the beginning of the conversation. And after that, we talk a little bit about a recent episode of this podcast that Raphael had been listening to. That's a recent one with Amber and Sarah called Becoming Maman. Do you remember that episode? Just a few episodes ago now. So Raph had been listening to that one, and we kind of talk about that a little bit. And then the conversation just keeps on flowing from there, taking in some details about the social rules related to talking to new parents about their children. In fact, like me, Raph is also a new father. His son is just 6 months old now. Also, we talk about British social etiquette in general, how we both know each other and how we first met, and then on to the details of Raph's project, learning English at summer schools in the UK, Liverpool, Oxford University, his friend who was in Star Wars, and various other things. Okay, so now that you're ready, let's dive into this chat with Raphael Miller, and here we go. That's right.
Have you tried turning it off and on again?
Yeah, you've got turning it on and off again. Yeah. Blowing on it.
Yeah. In the 90s.
Right. This is how you fix things.
Is there any dust on it? I'm all out of suggestions then, I'm afraid.
Take the battery out, turn them round and put them back in again. And just hitting it.
Exactly.
Yes.
But yeah. But all good, man. What about you?
Yeah, fine, thanks.
I was enjoying your previous episode.
Oh yeah. What were we talking about?
It was expansive, you know. I don't even know if it was the previous one actually. It was one of the previous five or six Becoming Maman.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
So it went all over, you know. Like nature versus nurture, orangutans, you know.
Yes, right.
All of that.
Yeah, I tend to find that if I try to force episodes to go in a particular direction, then it all starts to kind of get a bit awkward and unnatural. Yeah. And right. So the best way to keep the conversation flowing is just to think, well, what the hell? If it's going to go off in a different direction, why not let it go that way?
And that's quite it must be a bit of a skill. So sort of gently sort of cajole the conversation in a general direction.
It depends who I'm talking to. I mean, in that one, I was talking to Amber and Sarah, and they're both quite excitable when they get together.
Yeah.
And especially when talking about that subject, they've got a lot of things to say. And so it's easily, it gets carried away quite easily.
Seemed like a good dynamic.
Yeah, it is. Their show is very good. It's very funny.
Their stand-up show.
Yeah, they're doing a stand-up show about being a mum in France.
Yeah, okay.
And that's cool. It's very good. They've managed to kind of highlight and identify lots of the issues.
Oh, really?
That sort of expat mums have in France.
Of which I'm sure there are one or two.
There are quite a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm quite happy to just jump straight into doing our recording, if that's if that's okay for you.
Works for me, man. You know, I feel like we've hit a good rhythm already. You know.
Yeah. Well. All right. Well, let's go.
How's the audio? Okay.
The audio's all right. Yeah. What are you actually using?
I've just got my my headphones. They're like fairly good quality ones, though. They're like noise cancelling, which helps for me, but not so much for anybody else.
Yeah, that's right.
But if they've got a built-in microphone that's like right next to my mouth,
that helps. You know,
conveniently.
if the microphone was right next to another body part, that might not work so well.
I guess it's good, but I'm wearing a duvet over my shoulders just to stop any kind of sonic interference,
just to prevent the sound from bouncing off your shoulders too much,
because my massive glass shoulders,
because we all know in broadcasting, we've seen the insides of radio studios. Sometimes you see them on TV and you just see all of the presenters wearing towels, duvets over their shoulders.
Radio, it's broadcasting 101.
Yeah, basics, absolute basics of recording audio. Make sure that first thing you got to do, obviously, is before you set up all the microphones, just make sure that everyone in the studio has got duvet. You'll need to make sure you've got plenty of duvets available.
You can always see the new boy strolling into BBC broadcasting house without a duvet.
Like, wait a minute, where's your duvet? You've left your duvet. Oh, you've got to go. You're gonna have to go home and get your duvet then, because it's not going to work without a duvet. God, didn't they teach you that at school? Yeah.
Oh, big time. Yeah. So I mean, it might be doing something. I imagine it's doing very little, but
it sounds good. It sounds good. I think it's the duvet. It's
sweet.
It's making all the difference.
It's crucial.
All right, well, let's go. I mean, without, you know, let's dispense with the small talk at the beginning and just kind of dive straight into it.
Sounds great.
So, Raf, how are you doing then? You doing all right?
Yeah, really good, thanks, really good. Sort of quite a lot going on at the moment, but yeah. I think, you know, as your listeners know, you know, you're a new father as well, and people, there's always that temptation to be like, oh, you know, I'm really, you know, being a new father is really destroying me, and it is tiring, but I'm not gonna, you know, kind of over egg that sort of thing. It's just everything's great, man, everything's good.
Do you find that when you're talking to people who are already parents that they seem to emphasize the difficulty a bit too much?
Yeah, I think there's so much going on. I find when you speak to other people who are like parents of newborns, it's like an absolute etiquette kind of like minefield.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's sort of, you know, say they've got kids who are like a bit older than yours, you know, you don't want to be like them thinking that you're all like, oh yeah, my kid's amazing, you know, it's like sleeping really well and all this sort of thing. But at the same time, you don't want to downplay any of the good stuff either. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of like you kind of just try and find like a common ground, like, oh, that's really bad for you. Yeah, that's really bad for me as well. Okay, let's talk about that thing.
Yeah, because if you're talking about how difficult everything is, then potentially you're kind of putting a downer on their joy.
Yeah, exactly.
And also you don't want to be that person who's saying, oh, you know, you got, oh, it's going to get difficult, you know. The difficult stuff is, oh, you're in the good period now, but it's going to get really tough. You don't want to be one of those doom and gloom people.
Yeah, like you ain't seen nothing yet sort of vibe on, you know, like, you just wait sort of thing.
But at the same time, there seems to be a social convention that says that you shouldn't talk about how great it is too much. You don't want to be a nauseating parent who's like, oh, it's just wonderful, our baby's just so adorable and cute and everything's just fantastic and she sleeps so well. You don't want to do that either. So it is a minefield.
Yeah, it's tricky. I think, you know, you just play it safe, kind of. a few general kind of things, and I don't know, it is always tricky. The better you know someone, the easier it is.
Yeah,
and you know, you kind of know their experience a little bit, know their mindset beforehand. It's when you go to kind of groups and and things. I don't know if it's the same in France, but you know, there are all kinds of kind of crazy like groups you can go to, and they become pretty kind of competitive.
Really?
I think so. Yeah, I haven't been to that many, but from what I hear, I've had a few. Because I just think it happens almost subconsciously or accidentally. Like people just like talking about their experience, and then you're like, oh my god, like that's not the same for me, or that hasn't happened for us, or and it's just because every child is just so different. You know, you can't kind of, you'll end up with loads of neuroses if you really worry about all these different kind of experiences that everyone else is having, you know?
Yeah, I guess also people are sort of comparing themselves to other people and trying to work out if their experience is normal or not. And and so it's very hard to work out what other people are genuinely experiencing.
Yeah,
and whether they're just sugarcoating things or maybe making things sound much worse than they actually are, when secretly, you know, they're going, oh, it's so hard, you know, we just haven't slept for, I haven't slept for about 18 months.
Yeah.
I'm literally dead. I mean, I am actually dead now. I got my death certificate last month. I don't know how I'm even having this conversation, to be honest with you. And then actually when they're at home, they're just having the best time with their child.
It's just fine. Because there's one person that I know who's like a friend of my partner's.
Mm.
And, you know, she's always like throwing stuff up on Instagram and kind of Facebook and like, you know, real doom and gloom sort of vibe.
Oh, yeah.
And then you meet her and her little baby and you're like, this baby like seems like just like a normal baby, you know, it seems fine. Yeah. And then she'll go away and write something about that period of time that you have also experienced that just doesn't reflect that what has happened. You know? So you're like, okay, well, now I have objectively experienced that as well, so I know that what you're saying is just like not factual.
So like, for example, you go and have a coffee with this person and their child, and for you it's just, you know, a fairly normal, easygoing coffee, but then you read their version of it on Facebook and it's what kind of thing would she be writing then? Because I don't know if I don't know if it's the same in other countries. I don't know if it's just British people being weird and kind of, you know, and like downplaying their joy and presenting a more sort of miserable, struggling sort of image to the world, when
that
in fact
it's part of the British mentality.
It's weird,
isn't it?
That, why do we do that?
Yeah, you don't want to be seen as a show off, you know, that like you're kind of finding life a bit too easy.
Yeah, it's like modesty, isn't it? It's somehow being modest and sort of kind of putting yourself down and talking about how difficult and horrible your life is. Somehow that's an act that's an act of kindness to other people.
Yeah, because you make everybody else feel better about theirs.
Yeah, because you're being so nice to everyone by going, oh no, I'm awful, I'm a total failure, my life's a complete joke. And as a generous thing to make everyone feel better. Weird.
Yeah, because you meet people, you know, when you kind of, in, you know, teaching especially, you meet people from all over the world all the time.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard to generalize, but, you know, there are certain countries where you just expect people from that country just to be more upbeat, you know, and you meet them and they're like, yeah, everything's great. Yeah, everything's really cool, you know, and they've just like broken their leg or, you know, it's like got fired or something.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, you know, I got fired, but hey, man, you know, don't worry, it's going to be okay. And you're like, oh, okay, well, great outlook, you know, keep it up. One kind of sign can be the way that people sort of say hello, you know. So in France, it's like, you know, ça va, you know, like, how's it going? Mm-hmm. And usually people say, oh, ça va bien, you know, it's going pretty well. Mm-hmm. And then in other countries, like in Spain, it's quite similar. In Portuguese, like in Brazil, they say like often even something more positive than that, like, you know, tudo joia or something, you know, like everything's amazing. Mm-hmm. But in England, it's like we usually say not too bad. And it's like, well, if that's not kind of putting a negative slant on things, and then it's like, yeah, things aren't too bad today. Like usually they're really awful, but today it's not too bad.
Yeah, not too bad. I mean, you know, I'm basically surviving. Like, could be worse, you know, it could be worse. I can't complain.
Yeah, that's genuinely what people say, you know, and it's like, well, surely that just reveals the fairly, I'm not saying, you know, we're all really terrible people, I'm really negative, but come to England, it's amazing, you know, learn English. But
I mean, that's just one side of things, of course, that perhaps, you know, obviously we're not just constantly like putting ourselves down and always focusing on the negative, not at all. But what you might find is that, like for my listeners, when they do speak to native English speakers, or when they just hear native English speakers in the UK talking to each other, there is sometimes a little bit of, let's say, kind of modesty or kind of self-effacing humour, maybe making yourself the butt of the joke, or maybe kind of emphasising some of the more difficult things about your life, just because we don't want to look like we're showing off. We don't want to make everyone think that we're having an amazing time somehow, because that's irritating, or it's somehow an attempt to be nice.
You don't want to be seen as fake. I don't want to come across as fake, I suppose.
I guess like in the United States, it's arguably a bit different, although obviously it's very diverse there. But you could say that in America, they tend to be a bit more positive too. Like, oh, it's great, and everything's, I don't know, maybe something to do with the culture. Like in the States, they will find it more socially acceptable to put a positive spin on things. Like you see, for example, on television, when on American news, when someone is interviewed on an American news show, they've got a big grin on their face, big smile, you know, like, so Chad Johnson in Denver, and Chad Johnson's there with a big smile on his face. Here we are in Denver. Whereas in England, it's like, so we now go over to Dave Smith in Coventry. I'm in Coventry, and you can tell by the tone of my voice that it's not pretty, you know.
I think it's got to be that, you know. I don't, who knows why, you know. I think it's complex cultural, social factors kind of all interplaying, but
I think so.
I don't know. It's there's definitely something at work there.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's the weather.
Well, it's like the never-ending winter this year, so that's definitely going to be affecting a few people's mood.
I think so. So, Raf, when was the last time we actually spoke with each other? Do you remember?
I think it was possibly on this podcast. Well, you know, when we recorded another podcast around that time.
Yeah.
Which is, oh, like 3 years ago or something.
I've got the date here pre-prepared.
Oh, excellent. It was a Christmas podcast, I remember.
It was a Christmas podcast. So you came to Paris a few years ago. You stayed with us. And while you were here, we recorded the A to Z of Christmas, which was episode number 160.
I remember it was an epic. I feel like maybe we had like a break in the middle or something. we let people like rest their ears for
I think
a
we
while.
May have paused the podcast, gone and slept for 8 hours, and then carried on.
Yeah, it was great fun, man. It was cool, but I feel like the Lepsters, who made it to the end in like one or like two or even three sittings, they should get like some sort of award.
But it's, you know, it's like that for pretty much every episode.
Really?
Yeah, they often go on for up to 90 minutes.
That's great, though. I mean, it's such a good way to, because I used to listen to a lot of podcasts practicing French and Spanish, and it really is good, you know. I think as a way to like kind of improve your language in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think so too.
Just for the listeners, it feels the longer it goes on for, just the better your English is going to be becoming, just naturally. So just go with it.
Exactly, that's the idea. I've always thought the whole point is that I want my listeners to listen regularly and listen long term. And listen for longer periods of time. I mean, from the producer's point of view, from the people who make podcasts for learners of English, the accepted wisdom is, oh, they should be short. They should be 10 minutes, 6 minutes, 6 minute English, right?
Right.
You know, the shorter, the better. In fact, they should just be, you know, 1 minute, 30 seconds is too long. They shouldn't even exist. They shouldn't happen at all. You know, this is the
just a word.
Yeah, just one word, maybe a letter. Just one letter would be better. The shorter, if we can shave it down even to small letters, like just the, like, I
brutal editing.
Yeah, I, just the letter I, the shortest letter that we can think of, just a full stop. That's it. That's best. You know, I question that kind of logic, and I think, well, why? Why should they be 15 minutes long? Sure, okay, learners of English, they get tired easily, but you know, they're not. It's not like they are. They get tired easily, but it's not like they're operating at high altitude.
You know, people can choose as well. You know, it's not like once you start listening, like you have to get to the end. You know, it's like you can press pause and come back later. It's fine.
Yeah.
Like it's not like because a 90-minute podcast exists, you can only ever start listening to it if you know for sure that you're going to make it to the end.
Safety warning at the beginning of the podcast. Just should know that this podcast is 15 minutes long. If you don't have 15 minutes available ahead of you, then do not press play. Press play at your own risk.
Yeah. Block out a suitable amount of time in your schedule.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. Episode 160, The A to Z of Christmas. That's the last time you were on this podcast. And that's around about the last time that we actually saw each other and talked to each other, that, you know, that sort of weekend or whenever it was that you came over. Wow, that's how many years ago? 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. That's about four or five years ago. 4 years
ago. A lot's happened since.
Really? First of all, before we get to the what's new stuff, how do we know each other anyway?
From the London days, the London teaching days, you know, in the London School of English.
That's right.
It was halcyon times, really, you know, just great times.
They were, weren't they?
You know, I have no kind of qualms about admitting that, you know, for your listeners' benefit, that you were my kind of teaching, my English teaching sort of guru when I first came to London, because I didn't really have a clue what I was doing.
Really?
And I'd kind of peer over and see these like beautiful prepared lessons that you'd done, and all these like kind of you know, really good lesson plans and things like that, and think, yes, this is the structure that I should be kind of following, you know. So thanks for that if you didn't know that already.
Oh, no, that's right. You're welcome.
But yeah, just from hanging out in London and stuff, and you know, working together and with all the other guys and everything, it was a good time, man. Yeah. Really good times.
Really good times. And then I guess sort of you started to. So we would work together at the London School of English, and then you would kind of disappear during the summer months, like July and August. I remember there are just a couple of years where you just sort of left the London School and you were working elsewhere in the country.
Yeah, yeah.
What were you doing?
Just ghosted out for to go and work at summer schools. Yeah, like so I think I did – well, not I think. I did my first one in 2008. So just before I started working at the London School, then had a bit of a gap.
Yeah.
And then started doing them, you know, did another one kind of 2010, 2012. So yeah, just kind of pretty much every year after that.
Teaching at summer schools?
Yeah, so it's like kind of – usually they're about 5 weeks long, you know, for students from all over the world.
Yeah.
Like tend to be teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So – you know, you usually have between ages that are quite close together. They just come from all over the world just to stay and live in a boarding school in the UK with loads of other students in a kind of really great immersive English speaking environment and just do lessons and activities. And it's like just this kind of really is quite it's quite an experience for everyone, you know, like for the students and for the staff as well, because it's like you're in a little bubble.
Yeah,
and you're just kind of doing all this stuff all the time, and the students are kind of working on their English all like pretty much just all day, really.
Yeah.
But it's great fun, man. You know, it really is cool, and it's, you know, you often have lots and lots of different nationalities together, so the kind of opportunities for the students go like far beyond just like learning their English, you know, learning better English sort of thing.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, really kind of expanding their horizons and meeting people from all around the world and stuff. So you started doing more and more summer school stuff. And then I guess I moved to France and started working here. And then you basically went off and worked full time in summer schools, didn't you?
Yeah. So I did a bit of time. Sounds like I was in jail. Like I went overseas for a little while. So I went to the Middle East, for a little bit. And then just sort of in like either side of that, again, worked at summer school, and now I've just sort of started my own summer school, really.
Right.
So that's just like the big project that's taken over my life, alongside little baby Leo at the moment, you know. So yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Little baby Leo. So how old is Leo now?
Six months yesterday.
So really? Wow.
I don't know where those 6 months went. Apparently they happened. You know, it's just, yeah, the time just, it's you must be finding that as well, the time just like flies.
Absolutely, yeah, time flies so fast, it's ridiculous.
I think it's because you are busy, you know.
Yeah.
Or pretty much all the time, so you just, yeah, like, you're not just sitting around like chilling, listening to like some albums. Yeah. It's like we were trying to think, like, what did we do with all our free time before, you know, like before the baby. And like, I don't know, like watching films, I don't, box sets, who yeah. knows? It's just, yeah, it's different. So yeah, those 6 months have just zipped by, and it's almost summertime.
So now what you're doing is you're looking after the baby and just sort of living the domestic life and all that stuff. But yeah, you've set up your own business then. You're setting up your own summer school.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So
what are the details? Tell us all about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be my pleasure. It'd be my pleasure. So it's in Liverpool,
mm-hmm.
and it's for students between 12 and 16 years old, you know, essentially like young teenagers, really, because, you know, these are kind of, I think it's like quite a good age, really, you know, when like kids are really starting to have these experiences, going overseas more or less on their own, maybe like school trips and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the school actually that I used to go to when I was a kid. So
really?
I know the school really well. Yeah. Yeah. It's called Liverpool College. So it's a great, it's like a really big school. It's like one of Liverpool's oldest schools, and they've got really cool facilities, like loads of sports pitches and indoor sports facilities, great classrooms. It's like really modern. And also they've got really good accommodation, so it's like the perfect combination, really, you know.
Yeah.
And being in Liverpool is pretty great, especially this year, because it's back when we were like properly in the EU. Liverpool was the European capital of culture in 2008.
Yeah.
So it's the 10 year anniversary of that. So there really, there's like tons and tons of events and things like that planned in Liverpool all year, but obviously lots of it's happening in the summer. So I think, you know, it's going to be like a really kind of cool atmosphere, and like in the central Liverpool, it should be, you know, really, really sort of vibrant, even more so than usual. So yeah, that's kind of what we'll be able to experience, as well as, you know, students do English lessons 5 days a week, and then we go on other excursions like theme parks and museums and show them around the city and go to nearby places. It's like, it's full on, you know, it's like, yeah, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week sort of vibe, you know. It's
brilliant. It should be really. So wait a minute, so going back to Liverpool then, so you're from Liverpool, aren't you?
Yes, that's right.
Anfield, that's right. Isn't it?
No, I'm a little bit in like sort of further south in Liverpool, so it's an area called Calderstones, which is quite near the school, actually.
Why was I thinking Anfield?
The football team, name of the stadium?
I know, it's not Anfield, it's where do they have the Grand National Horse Race?
Oh, Aintree.
Wasn't it near there?
Yes. No, that's actually kind of on the edge.
What am I thinking? Why am I thinking, yeah, Anfield and Aintree? Anfield and Aintree, I don't know.
All the places in Liverpool beginning with A.
Just
A to Z again. You say the A to Z of Liverpool. That's the next podcast.
It would be a good idea. A to Z of Liverpool. First letter, A.
Yeah.
A, mate.
That's a, I'm not sure how many of your listeners will understand that one.
Go on, you'll have to explain it.
Well, it's the Scouse pronunciation, you know, like, so I'm not pretending that I don't have a Scouse accent.
Do you have a Scouse accent?
I do have a bit of a Scouse accent, although it's weird because some people say to me, oh my God, like your accent is so strong. And I'm like, oh really? I didn't think it was. But then I go to Liverpool and people are sort of like, all right, mates, where are you from? Yeah, so it's, I'm like, yeah, well, even when I lived in Liverpool, people used to ask me where I was from. Like people from Liverpool, also from Liverpool,
yeah,
would say, where are you from? And I'd be like, well, you're just over there. You know, that's my house.
Yeah, I'm from thing. This so, street.
Like, yeah, exactly. I wasn't born in Liverpool, you know. So if you're born in Liverpool and your family is from Liverpool, you know, you are kind of classified as a Scouser. You know, you can call yourself a Scouser. It's like a Cockney in London.
Yeah.
So you're like properly from Liverpool, you can be a Scouser. And if you've ever heard of John Bishop, the comedian, well, that's probably a fairly good barometer of Scouser, a strong Scouser
accent. Actually, Raph, funny you should say that, because I did an episode all about John Bishop.
Nice.
And followed it up with an episode all about the Liverpool accent.
There you go. There you go. So just go back and re-listen.
Go back into the archives. But yeah, John Bishop, yes, is a good benchmark for a Scouse accent. That sort of Scouse accent like that. But you don't really sound like that, Raph. You don't sound like a proper Scouser.
Exactly. I'm faking it. I'm a plastic Scouser.
You weren't born in Liverpool then?
No. I was born down south in Guildford, actually.
You were born in Guildford? It's not far from where I grew up in Ealing. Yeah,
West
London. Yeah. It's not that far from Guildford.
Yeah, it's just a short hop, skip and a jump. So you're down Surrey Hamps way and then up to Liverpool. Well, up to Glasgow. Glasgow.
Wait,
and then Liverpool.
Born in Guildford, then moved to Glasgow. At what age?
About two.
Okay. And then?
Yeah, young. I mean, you know, yeah. I was taken there. I had very, very little contribution to the thought process.
It wasn't your choice.
Yeah, no. I wasn't like, you know what, guys? I'm hearing great things about Glasgow.
Like, yeah, this Guildford's all right, but Glasgow's where it's at.
Exactly.
And then Liverpool at what age?
Yeah, then at 5 to 18, Liverpool. So rest
five,
of my...
5 to 18, okay. Yeah, so yeah. Not and a...
Rest. Sort of childhood, basically, in Liverpool.
Okay, not a bona fide Scouser then, but I don't know. From age 5 to 18, that's a pretty good stint.
It's a good run. Yeah. It's solid. Yeah. You know. So yeah.
Okay, and so the summer school that you've set up is based in your old school, I guess, during the summer when you know the kids aren't there.
Exactly. We kind of borrow the school effectively. So. Yeah. You know, hire it, I suppose, would be the correct word.
Yeah, you're not just
sounds a little bit unofficial. We just sneak in while no one's looking. Yeah, so they have actually kind of turned into like they've got a small part of the school is boarding. Some students from all over the world, really, like a handful, who sort of are residential students at the normal school. So, but in the holiday, they all go home. So we use that accommodation and then the rest of the school as well. Students just essentially live there and, you know, all the meals and all the activities and all the lessons, it's all kind of part of the summer school kind of experience.
Okay. So that's what boarding means. It's a boarding school is where kids actually live at the school. They sleep there and as well as taking their classes there, I guess a bit like Hogwarts.
I was just about to say, think Harry Potter, but fewer dragons and less magic.
Just less magic.
Yeah. Everything else is more or less the same.
Just scale it back. Scale back the magic. There's still magic there, I suppose, because the experience.
The magic of English.
Right.
That's exactly what it's like, and it is really cool. You know, it's. You know, much as you would imagine it, in terms of the experience, you know, and the kind of really cool, like international, diverse environment. But I think, you know, it is in terms of a way to learn English. Mm. It is really, you know, going to a summer school is really different to any other way of learning English. You know, because you're probably learning as much when you're not actually like in a lesson.
Yeah.
Because you're always interacting with like the staff and other students. So it's a very sort of organic way of learning English as well. So you're going to be sort of doing activities and vocabulary and maybe checking grammar and things like that in the lessons. But then when you're coming out, you're just interacting with people in a very kind of natural way. Mm. And also in that way that it's kind of the the reality of learning English now is because, say, if I'm from Portugal and I speak English, probably most of the time I'm speaking English, it's not to an English person. It might be to like a Spanish person or a German person or like someone from India or anything, you know. So it's not, you know, you're kind of learning that natural way of speaking to non-native speakers as well.
Yeah.
So it's really cool, you know.
That is actually a really important skill for people to develop. And your summer schools are for like teenagers, as you said, and so it's very important for them to learn not only how to, you know, speak English to native speakers, but also to be able to speak and communicate effectively with non-native speakers of English too. Yeah, because ultimately these are the people they're going to be doing business with in English after Britain has left the European Union.
Yeah, exactly. Just doing lots of nice kind of friendly things. Yeah, yeah. Shame. But, you know, still come to England, though. It's great.
Oh, yeah.
But,
I mean, where else are they going to go to learn the real English? You know, they're not necessarily going to go to, like, I don't know, somewhere else, like going to Liverpool. Yeah. That's still going to be an attractive and worthwhile prospect, even after our politicians have done all the nonsense that they're doing. I think there's, I think that it's, I mean, obviously, we look at something like Brexit and we are so concerned about the effects that it will have, but certain things I think will still remain unchanged, and that includes things like the value of traveling to the UK as an experience, and a lot of the things that the UK has to offer, and the potential for learning English effectively by going there and doing things like summer school placements and things like that. So I think that it'll be all right somehow.
Yeah. We'll muddle through. It's kind of I don't think things are going to change. That, you know, they're not going to be making people get visas and stuff to, you know, get on an EasyJet flight from from Paris or whatever. It's going to be pretty much business as usual, I think.
In fact, something like you and setting up a business that is attracting sort of foreign investment, even in a, you know, in this sort of way, is probably going to be encouraged, and it's the sort of thing that's going to save the country, to be honest.
a one-man crusade to save the country from Brexit.
Raphael Miller in Brexit rescue bid.
Exactly. Here's the news. I know. It's just, I get really depressed when I think about it. But yeah, I think it's still going to be great. You know, it's just, you just sort of, do what you're, you know, you kind of get on with things, don't you, and kind of go about your normal kind of business and just
keep calm and carry on.
Exactly.
Just give us an idea of what a typical day might look like for these teenagers. Now, my listeners, I don't know if I've got many 14-year-olds listening to this. I think I've got some. I have got some people. Some 12, 13, 14, 15-year-olds listening to this.
Once the word gets out about this podcast, you're gonna be inundated.
Oh yeah, all the cool kids will be listening to this. But I expect that I've probably got more people who have kids who are coming up to this age or who are at this age, and who are thinking of how to help their teenage or tween-age kids. Tween, exactly. This is like what, just before teenager, isn't it?
Yeah,
tween age, between being a child and being a teenager.
Yeah.
So anyway,
tricky years.
Yeah, the tricky period. But I'm sure many of my listeners are parents who are thinking, "How can I help my kids improve their English?" And summer school placements, summer school experiences can be a really good idea. So imagine we've got, our teenagers coming to your school. What's an idea of a typical day that they might experience?
Yeah, that's a good idea actually. At our summer school, the students would be up fairly early. It's because it's a kind of full day. It's not about having a lie-in until like we do all the lessons in the morning. So we'd sort of wake up around 7:30-ish, kind of everybody's getting ready, like hanging out, playing some table tennis, just coming down into the kind of like communal area. Mm-hmm. So coming down from the bedrooms into the sort of common rooms in their part of the accommodation. Mm-hmm. If there's any like information or little bits of news or something like that to be passed on to the students, the staff would do that then. Then the staff would bring them all over, have breakfast. After breakfast, we have, you know, 3 hours of lessons. Mm-hmm. So like two lessons with a break in the middle.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in between, you know, after the lessons and before lunch, there's probably like a little bit of a break. And then we have lunch. And then it's kind of a bit of time for students to go back to the accommodation, get changed, like hang out, relax, get ready for like afternoon activities. Mm-hmm. So afternoon activities would be something like sports or arts and crafts. There'd be a bit of a selection for students to choose from. Mm-hmm. So they can like maybe practice something that they know and that they really like, or they could try something a little bit different, something new. Then after that's finished, again, back to the accommodation, depending what they've been up to, they might need to like get changed out of their sports clothes or whatever, you know, it's up to them. Mm-hmm. Just some relaxed time to chill out at the accommodation, to kind of hang out together, maybe call home, like, you know, get on the Wi-Fi, everything like that.
Yeah.
Then obviously evening meal. And then after the evening meal, there would be another activity, an evening activity. So could be anything from like a big all school activity, like some sort of game or competition, like quizzes, could be a trip out to the cinema, like bowling, you know, just there's a whole kind of variety of things really. Yeah. And then, so that's, you would have that like same day, kind of that sort of formula, mm-hmm. 5 of the days of the week, and then 2 other days, not necessarily weekend days, like you would have an excursion.
Yeah.
So we'd go somewhere for the whole day. So they have that balance in the week, you know, it's not kind of lessons every single day.
Yeah.
Lots of lessons, lots of learning, but also trips, like visiting places, learning about the culture and the kind of region, or going to a theme park and just getting like, you know, on all the kind of biggest rides and like getting the kind of absolute.
Getting really scared on some crazy roller coaster ride in the theme
exactly.
park. Which
exactly.
Which theme park is it, by the way?
Because we're in the north, we can go to Alton Towers.
Alton Towers, yeah,
obviously the king of UK theme parks.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it works, really. It's just like I said, it is a full day. Yeah. You know, we don't sort of just want students to be like sitting around for hours, and
yeah.
You know, often you will, you know, it really varies, like different summer schools in the UK, like the quality does vary quite a lot, you know, so often you'll see like kids on an excursion from a summer school, and they're just sort of like listlessly like sitting around in the park or something, not really like doing anything.
Yeah.
But we kind of want our students to be like engaged, like active, like chatting to each other, chatting to the staff, doing something fun, you know, it's just all about like having loads of fun and improving their confidence to express themselves in English.
That's brilliant.
And at the end of the 2 weeks, because usually students will come for 2 weeks, they go home just hopefully much better at English, much more confident, but also like pretty much fully exhausted, because they've been really busy and active every single day. Because the staff, you get one day off a week.
Yeah.
So it's quite hardcore. Like when you work at a summer school, you're really tired. But then you think, well, hang on, the staff get one day off, but like the kids are busy like every single day, you know? So when they're done, they go home, and it's like, go home and have a big sleep, I think, basically.
This is exactly what parents want, basically, at summer. They want to get rid of the children, first of all,
exactly.
for a week or two.
Yeah.
Or how many weeks, by the way?
Well, the school's open for 4 weeks, but usually people, you know, they send the kids for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's the... you know, the typical period of time.
Right. So the parents want to get rid of the kids for a couple of weeks so they can have a holiday from the
kids. Exactly. Living the dream.
Yeah, living the dream, exactly. And they want the kids to come back with vastly improved English, having made international friends and having, you know, had all these experiences and done all these things in English, purely in English for 2 weeks.
Exactly.
And then also for them to be completely exhausted so that they just sleep and they don't cause any problems.
Really quiet at home and just, you know, much more intelligent.
yes.
Yeah. I mean, and also it's like, you know, then for the following years, you know, those same students are either going to be maybe like visiting each other in each other's countries, or coming back to the school and like seeing each other again at the school the following year, or you know, seeing the same staff again. So you really build like a really nice community. And also like one other thing about summer schools that I kind of, after I'd done quite a few of them, I realized that's really cool, is that when, you know, when the students come, that there isn't like this sort of, you know, that they're on their own, you know, so there are no sort of expectations of them, and no one really kind of like knows them, you know, so they can just kind of come and like express themselves and like have fun and do what kind of whatever they want, whatever activities they want. They don't have their friends around them, like sort of saying, oh, you know, why are you doing arts and craft? Like, you should be doing football.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you can just come and do whatever you want, you know? And then it's just a way to sort of try loads of new hobbies and activities and stuff like that. I don't know if that really makes sense.
But... No, it makes total sense. It gives them a chance to kind of do something new and sort of broaden their horizons a bit, because it's sort of like stepping out of their normal world and making new friends and sort of like having... I remember as a kid, as a teenager, that sort of thing was always amazing. When you kind of go off and at the beginning, you're nervous because you don't know anyone. But everyone's in the same boat.
Yeah.
And so you may end up making friends with people that become really solid, strong friendships.
Yeah, because you've been through that quite formative experience.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like you're... doing something new every single day, so you're always like really aware of what's going on. You're not just at home doing the same thing over and over again. It's every day is something a little bit unexpected.
Yeah,
you know, we always try and we do have a schedule, but we'll always try and like throw in a few things to like surprise the kids and like do something a little bit different. And you know, even if it's just a small thing. So yeah, it's like people you meet there, you're definitely going to keep in touch with and sort of have a really good friendship with.
Sounds fantastic. So can I just ask you about the staff? Like, these are the members of staff that the kids will probably have a lot of contact with, that they'll be talking to a lot and spending a lot of time with. So who are your staff? Like, where do you get your staff from?
Would be people who, you know, maybe they're working as English teachers in all over the world, really.
Mm-hmm.
So often they'll be working at a school abroad, and then they will also have a massive summer holiday.
Yeah.
So they might come think, okay, well, I'll go and do like a few weeks working at summer school or something like that. So they could be people usually quite young, you know, like sort of just started in their kind of English teaching careers. So, you know, they're kind of looking for a way to fill up that holiday, basically. They might also be like university students, because you have like two main groups of staff. So you have like the teachers, and then you have the activity staff. So the activity staff would be running most of the stuff, obviously, in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So they might be like university students, people training to be teachers. Maybe like often you get lots of people who are training to be PE teachers,
right?
Like kind of sports teachers.
Yeah.
So they want to come and like try out like their what they've been learning, basically, you know, and sort of run these activities and get experience that way. Like I say, most of the staff, you know, because at the end of the day is, you know, that it's a very dynamic atmosphere. So you need a lot of energy. So basically it usually appeals to people who are like a little bit younger.
Yeah.
So it's like they also that works quite well, because then they're slightly closer in age, the students, and, you know, they can really get to know them and sort of tell them about the UK. And because it's not just in the lessons and in the activities that they're together. They would be like, when you have meals, the staff eat in the same place as the students. So, you know, they're interacting and chatting just in a natural way. Like, it's not like, okay, go and sit with those four students and talk to them about like English, music. Yeah. It's just relax, everybody just kind of interact in a natural way. In the breaks it's the same thing, because also it's obviously the students have to be supervised, but not in a way that's like really strict, like sort of security guards watching them. it's like this kind of interaction between staff and students, and then the supervision just happens naturally.
So there's always
a good kind of chance of kind of getting to know each other.
So it's kind of like a sort of a family vibe or something.
It really is because you also get a lot of the same staff coming back year after year.
Yeah,
so especially in like a smaller company, so they would maybe like 2 or 3 years you'd have like a core of staff.
Mm.
And they would really know each other and kind of get on really well. So the students, when they come into the school, they feel like they're coming into a living and breathing kind of school. It's not just loads of strangers who don't know each other. You know, it's like the staff have there's a good atmosphere there.
It's like a proper little community kind of thing.
Yeah, man, it's really nice. It is unlike anything else, you know, but. Like I say, that's why it's also quite short, because, you know, I think if you had that sort of environment running all year round, you'd never survive.
It'd be exhausting.
Yeah, exactly.
So some of my listeners might be curious. They might want to know more. What is actually the name of your company? What's the name of the summer school? What are all the details?
Excellent question. Yeah, it's called Your English Summer. So it's very easy to remember.
Your English Summer.
So it's the website is just the same. It's yourenglishsummer.co.uk.
Okay.
And yeah, all the details are on there. And you know, they can obviously contact me through the website, and you know, I can answer any questions and sort of tell them anything else they might be interested to know. I'd be, you know, more than happy to do that.
That's brilliant. I want to do it. Am I too old?
Sadly, you can maybe come and teach, you know.
Yeah, maybe if I get any time off.
Just tell your family you'll be back in 5 weeks, and
and I'll be completely useless to them when I return. I'll be too tired.
You'll be really tired. it's genuinely though because I did languages at school and university, and I'm sort of like, oh man, I wish there'd been something like that for English kids learning French that I'd known about that I could have gone to, because it is really good fun. You know, I think that's the thing about learning English as well. It's like there's so much out there, you know, like so many resources and so many kind of camps and like experiences that you can do. But obviously mine's the best, you know, so.
of course it is. What was I going to say? I was going to say, so yeah, you studied languages. I mean, you mentioned earlier on that you speak some French, you speak some Spanish, you speak some Portuguese.
Yeah, French and Spanish, a little tiny bit of Portuguese, not much.
Okay. And so what's your background in learning languages? Because I'm always curious to find out about people's experiences of language learning. We might be able to pick up a few little tips and tricks from you. Tell me about your language learning experiences.
Yeah, I mean, I think it happened almost by accident to begin with. I was just sort of quite drawn to learning French, really. It just seemed to come quite naturally. So it just made sense in my head, you know, like science and maths, it didn't really make sense in my head. But languages was like, oh, yeah, okay, I can put that together, and that kind of works. So it was just kind of cool. And you often at school as well, I think it's like a bit of a stereotype, but sometimes you have like a bit of a cool language teacher, you know, like a bit of a hippie dude, like, you know, or a nice kind of guy who's like a language teacher, you know? So you kind of have those good sort of role models.
So what, you had a good French teacher or Spanish teacher at school?
Yeah. I was lucky. I mean, I think it does often come down to that a lot, doesn't it? You know, I had a native French teacher actually. So that was really cool,
right.
Because, you know, it obviously everything just came so naturally in the pronunciation and everything like that.
Yeah.
And also she was really experienced. So, you know, she knew like how to kind of get the best out of students.
Yeah.
I don't know, in terms of like tips and tricks, I mean, it's kind of like with most things, I think it's sort of like just make sure you're enjoying it. Like, I don't know. And like, you're kind of focused on the purpose. I think a lot of the time, like, especially in the UK, people associate like learning languages with like negative experiences. I think, you know, like they're kind of like, oh man, like it was always so boring. But you have to, I think education in general is definitely coming on a lot and like developing a lot in terms of like the engagement of students and motivating them. But yeah, like definitely with languages, there has to be, you have to be able to see some sort of purpose, you know, like what's the reason for this? Like how will it help me in my future or something like that? And be able to see the results as well and the kind of improvement.
As an adult now who's you started learning languages when you were at school in your teenage years, but you went on to sort of study, what did you do at university again, by the way?
French and Spanish.
Where did you study?
I studied in Oxford.
University, nothing but the best.
I slipped in under the radar.
Yeah, how did you get into Oxford?
I don't know. Well, it's my French teacher, you know, she sort of drilled us, like literally. She kind of, it was like we did like a boot camp. So it was because it's like you have to have an interview, and you know, it's really crazy when you go to Oxford, like to go for your interview. So they sort of, you have to, like, you know, you wear a suit and stuff.
You had to wear a suit, really? Wow.
Well, you don't have to, but you just think, well, everyone else is going to be wearing a suit, so I better get a suit. That's probably the first time I had a suit, really. And so I was just, you know, absolutely like petrified, you know, like just beyond nervous, just like a statue. And I remember I went up this really creaky staircase, and the other students. Who was before me was having her interview. So I was like, okay, cool. I'll try and listen at the door and like see if I can tell like how many people are in there, because I knew it would be like either maybe one, but more likely two, possibly three people interviewing me. So I was like, okay, like this should be fine. But I could hear like quite a few voices. And then the interview finished and she said goodbye. And then I heard like goodbye, 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 goodbye. I was like, what the hell, like how many people are in this interview? 8 people.
No way.
So I went in there, it was like a panel, you know, it's like a jury. There were 8 people because it was languages, so they had all the representatives of like, you know, all the major European languages. So it was like French, German, Spanish, Italian, Portuguese. They were all in there, so I just got battered.
It was like the European,
like half an hour.
It's like the European Council.
Yeah, exactly, you know. It was hilarious, but somehow survived it. But it's quite strange, quite a bewildering experience.
But you got in Oxford.
Obviously said something that they liked.
Nice one.
I think it's famous, it's known everywhere. I think there is definitely more of an aura around the names Oxford and Cambridge than is kind of justified, though.
Really?
You know, I think they are amazing, you know, amazing unis, and you basically, you know, you have the best, some of the best like leading minds on any given topic, like in the world, you know. So that's just like, you know, you see, you're there and there's your tiny, tiny little brain. And then there's this professor with this like huge, like, you know, kind of planet-sized brain. So you're kind of, you know, you are in the presence of greatness. But at the end of the day, if you're really interested in your subject and kind of, you know, quite good at it and work hard and stuff, and you want to work, you know, you want to kind of study really hard, like a lot of the time while you're at university, then, you know, it's worth giving it a crack, because, you know, they can only say no.
Yeah,
at the end of the day, it'd be a pretty good experience.
Fantastic. Did you study with anyone famous?
Yes. Someone who's now really famous.
Yeah.
So, if any of your listeners have ever seen Star Wars, it's a bit of a stupid question, but everyone, like loads of people, have seen Star Wars. But so Rogue One.
Yeah,
he's in that. And also, he's an actor now. And also, he was in a TV show called The Night Of. and lots of other things. Road to Guantanamo. So there's this actor and musician called Riz Ahmed.
Yeah. How well did you know him?
He was a friend of mine, you know. We were mates. He was in the year below me. So he was doing PPE. And politics, philosophy and economics, which is like one of the kind of creme de la creme, like Oxford courses. You know, that's like one of the hardest to get in on. Like PPE and management and M&E, anything with an acronym, management and economics. Those two apparently are two of the most difficult to get in on.
Really?
So yeah, he kind of was doing that in the year below. But we knew each other fairly well, you know, like we'd always have a chat and stuff around whenever we bumped into each other. I very much doubt if he would recognize me now, you know. But it's kind of, I guess he'd be the most well known. But then it's like lots of other people who were there, you know, they're doing just really important stuff kind of in their fields, you know, like kind of journalists and things like that. But I guess he would be the most recognizable sort of person.
Yeah. Wow. What was he like then?
Yeah, he's just like really nice guy, man. You know, just like you sort of think, oh yeah, you know, these celebs, they're probably all arseholes like behind the scenes, but he was like super engaging.
Yeah.
That was the thing I would say about him. Like when you spoke to him, he's just, you know, he just really, you know, when you have the feeling that someone's really listening and they're really responding to what you're actually saying rather than just waiting for an opportunity to speak.
Yeah.
Like he was kind of like that, and just really interesting, like full of energy.
Yeah. I think he's great. I love his character in Rogue One. It's just brilliant and good film. I like Rogue One as a Star Wars film.
Yeah, I thought it was good as well. Yeah, yeah. I kind of, I maybe even more than The Force Awakens, I really, really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Must have been funny though to see your mate in a Star Wars film.
It's weird. It is quite weird. Like, especially on the big screen, it's just like, what? Like, what?
I never realized his head was that big.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is he so shiny?
He's massive.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a film. Oh,
I'm so small. Why is he so much bigger than me?
Why is he? Yeah. Why is he all flat?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a cinema.
Yeah. I don't know. It is because a lot of my friends like take the piss out of me now as well, because they're like, "Oh, are you really upset because Riz is so famous?" And I'm like, whatever. You didn't even know he was my friend until I told you. You know, like, do you think if I was so upset, I would have mentioned it, you know, like with like a massive complex about it.
Right.
But it is quite weird.
Are you still in touch with him?
I'm not, sadly. We drifted apart. I could hit him up on Facebook. just like start stalking him on Instagram or something. I don't know.
Yeah, saw you in the Rogue One. Pretty good. Yeah. Acting tips, just let me know. Yeah.
Looks like things are going well. Any chance I can drop in next time I'm in New York?
Yeah, I see you're quite famous now in Hollywood. Any chance we can maybe rekindle our friendship?
Yeah. Got any free stuff? You know, I just want some free stuff, Riz. Just give me the stuff.
Just wanted to remind you that we had a pretty good conversation once. Just it was pretty. We could do that again. Just saying.
Way back. Maybe he's just really desperate for like a normal friend, you know, like you know, he could be all these Hollywood kind of people.
Yeah.
Trying to like be his friend.
Maybe you should write to him and say, I know that you're fed up with Harvey Weinstein. I know we all are, but I'm just letting you know, Riz, that I'm a normal guy. And I'm here for you. If you need. Precisely.
No, I mean, it is kind of ridiculous. I mean, it's just like, I don't know if any one person needs to be so talented in like so many different fields.
Yeah.
It's basically just like a polymath.
Yeah.
Like I saw him emceeing on like the Tonight Show or something. He's like rapping. He's like rapping to Stephen Colbert.
Right.
I'm like, what's going on? And then he was on the actual cover of Time magazine.
He was on Time magazine cover.
Yeah. I'm like, at that point, I'm just sort of like, no, okay, stop. Like, nobody needs to be this successful apart from Bill Gates. Like,
yeah, exactly. It's like, calm down. I mean, yeah. He's good at pretending. Don't get carried away.
Chill. You know, we're British after all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good stuff.
I don't know, man. Interesting times.
All right. Well, I think that everyone even if, ladies and gentlemen listening, even if you don't have teenage children, I think you should check out Raph's summer school called Your English Summer. No one says that anymore, do they?
Yeah, I never know whether to, whether I'm giving myself away as a bit of a dinosaur by saying that or not. But
HTTP :// www.yourenglishsummer.co.uk. All lowercase.
Yeah, no spaces.
I love that.
Open up your web browser.
That's right. Turn on your computer, open up your web browser to access the internet, or the World Wide Web, as many people call it.
Yeah, I think the no space thing, I think finally everyone stopped saying that. That's the one that you just don't say anymore. Yeah, so there's no spaces? Like, yeah, really? In the web address, there's the URL, there are no spaces. Okay.
Or like in an email address, it's luketacher, LukeTacher, all lowercase, no spaces, at, you know, the at mark.
Yeah. Well, that's weird because I remember my mum trying to explain to her dad, like, well, this was probably like about 15 years ago. So to be fair, you know, and he was obviously like, you know, what's this email thing? And she was like, well, you know, you can send me an email, like a letter, but like made out of electricity, made out of data. And so she sort of said her email address to him. Mm. And she was like, and then she said the at. And he obviously was like, what's at? And she was like, it's that key. It looks like an A, but I could only hear her side of the conversation because she was on the phone.
Right.
And so she was like, it's that letter. Like, it's like an A, but with a circle around it. And then he obviously just like didn't believe her. So she was sort of like, no, I'm not joking. Really, there is a letter. There is one key for at. And he was obviously saying like, why wouldn't you just write at? You know. So this went on for quite some time. It was very amusing.
Oh, wonderful. What
just
was
this disbelief that someone had invented one letter for the word at?
Yeah.
You know?
Is that what that is? I mean, what was it used for before email addresses?
Yeah, who knows, man. Yeah, I guess he just never seen it because he'd never used email. So yeah. I taught my grandma how to use a computer, and it was like, you know, she'd never typed. She'd never used a typewriter before. Mm. And I was like, okay, here's your Dell computer. Like, other computers are available. You know, like, let's learn how to use a computer having never typed on a typewriter before, you know. So that was, it was just like, I don't know, it's really hard to like, but it was fascinating, you know.
Yeah.
Like picking up the mouse. I'm like, move the mouse up the screen. She's like picking it up off the table. I'm like, no, like, you have to keep the mouse on the table.
Right.
She's like, right, okay. It was amazing. It really was amazing.
Yeah, just that back in the days when it wasn't logical to operate a computer. These days it's so intuitive. Like, computers and devices and stuff are designed to be so intuitive. They know exactly. We're all on the same page. We know basically that you can, you know, squeeze the image and it gets bigger or smaller, or you can do double tap and whatever. But back in those days, none of it was intuitive. Just, oh, you mean I have to hold this thing and that's called a mouse? And okay, what do I do with it? And people are like pulling the mouse towards the screen as if you need to touch the mouse on the screen. It's like, no.
Keep
the mouse on the table. You see that little arrow? That little cursor, that's and then it, you know, in the beginning it's like really difficult to get the hand eye coordination. Do you remember, like, the mouse, you'd move the cursor and the cursor would be like going all over the place because we hadn't learned quite how to operate it,
or you'd run out of table.
Yeah, you'd run out and you'd have to roll the mouse back.
Yeah,
remember. And you also, in the early days, everything had to be done on top of a mouse pad.
Yeah.
And if the mouse left the mouse pad, then just no traction. It would
whole world
work.
Of pain, you know.
Yeah.
Every now and then you'd have to like unscrew the bottom of the mouse and get the little ball out and like put it in a special fluid and like wash off all the bits of like, you know, hair and like chewing gum and stuff that got stuck to it. Like, where's all this come from? Like, why is there a bit of coconut stuck to my mouse?
Yeah.
Ball,
all this space dust just collects around the mouse ball,
and you have to, like, only wash it in the fluid. Don't use any other kind of fluid apart from mouse ball fluid. You know?
Right. Right, exactly. It's actually made from mouse's saliva.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that can clean a mouse ball. It's genuine mouse saliva.
From a long way.
Yeah, water will just break it. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll just burst.
Oh, dear. Such fun times they were. Raf, thanks so much for talking to me on the podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on again, man.
Yeah.
We'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah, definitely. It's been loads of fun. We'll talk again soon.
Yeah, cool. All right. Thanks a lot. Right,
cheers. So that was a rambling chat with Raphael Miller. Don't forget to visit yourenglishsummer.co.uk and the Facebook page, facebook.com/yourenglishsummer, for more details about Raf's summer school in Liverpool. It could be a great thing for your teenage kids to do, or if you know any other parents who are looking for a small, friendly and genuinely fun English summer school experience, tell them about Your English Summer. Now, before we end here in this episode, here's another note about Luke's English Podcast Premium. I've been mentioning this for a couple of weeks now. People have been asking me when it's going to arrive. Well, I expect it to arrive in May. So just a couple of weeks, I think. Things slowed down a little bit this week because I got really ill with a very nasty throat infection, which I'm still recovering from. Tonsillitis, to be exact. That was the name of the infection, tonsillitis, an infection of the tonsils. Tonsils are glands at the back of the throat. And mine got infected and all swollen, which was intensely painful for about 5 days. My whole head felt like it was going to explode. In fact, I felt like someone was stabbing me in the head and neck and in the ears with needles, while also periodically stepping on my legs and back in a pair of Dr. Martin's boots. Swallowing was like torture. Basically, it wasn't nice at all. It was a lot like when I was sick in Japan. Thankfully, though, this time it was just the tonsils and not something more serious like it was back then. Anyway, the French healthcare system and my wife looked after me, and I'm feeling a lot better. Thank you very much for asking, if indeed you did. Also, for a week to 10 days this month, we're going to go to the UK on holiday, which means taking some more time out from podcasting duties. There should be another episode coming out while I'm away, but the launch of LEP Premium is unlikely to happen until May because of these reasons. I'm also still working with Libsyn, the host, to actually do things like make certain additions to the app and some other things before LEP Premium can actually happen. Anyway, it should come along in May, and when it does, you should find that one of the first premium episodes is a language review of this episode. Also, there are some language features from the episode about pets that I wanted to look at, so that's probably going to come up too. Remember that one of the aims of Luke's English Podcast Premium is to make sure that you really learn the English that you've heard on the podcast. Not just hear it, but really learn it properly. The English that you might not even have noticed, because quite often in these conversations, there are lots of, you know, bits of English that you might not even realize have happened. Because often, this is the way it goes, often when you're learning a language, you don't really know what you've missed because, you know, you don't know those phrases or you can't really hear them properly. You're not able to identify them. So you're sort of not even, there's a certain number of phrases or a certain amount of English that you're hearing that is kind of going over your head. And this is the stuff I really want to kind of, you know, focus my attention on to help bridge that gap between what you know now and what you really could learn from my podcast. So I'm talking about highlighting and teaching you the English that you might not even have noticed, but which you probably need a guiding hand, in this case, my guiding hand, with all those years of teaching experience and podcast experience. So I can help you with your English, and we can also have some fun while doing it. So a language review for this episode with LEP Premium coming up, I expect. Remember, too, that LEP Premium is basically going to work like this. So first of all, you'll create a profile with my podcast host, Libsyn.
So you need to just set up a, you know, a simple profile. And then when you register as a premium subscriber, you just need to pay a small amount per month. That would be, for example, the price of a coffee for me every month, like buying me a coffee every month. And that will allow you to access the premium content. And then you can get the that content in the Luke's English Podcast app, because you'd sign in with your Libsyn profile in the app, or you'd get it on a web page. And it's the same account login, the same exact account. You just sign in on the app, sign in online, and you can get the content on the in the app or online. And that's a chance for you to get content that focuses specifically on language teaching, while also allowing you to make a contribution to Luke's English Podcast. So you'll get those LEP premium episodes and also new phrasal verb episodes, plus some more bonus stuff for you, my premium subscribers, if you choose to do it. You'll be like my VIP club, and I'll be happy to reward you with exclusive content. And in return, you'll be helping to support the podcast properly. So that is all coming soon to Lepland. But right now, it's time to go. So I hope that you have a fantastic day or night or morning or afternoon or evening or milkshake or smoothie or tropical fruit juice or whatever it is that you're having. I hope you really, really, really thoroughly, properly enjoy it. And thank you again for listening to this episode of the podcast. And I'll speak to you very, very soon. But for now, goodbye. Bye. 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 Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.